Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is July 26, 2010, and you're listening to show number 57 of Who's Reading the Organon. We will be reading aphorism number 23 and 24 if we get around to it. We're going to start off with a couple of inspirational quotes today. This one is by Lily Tomlin. Why is it that when we talk to God, we're said to be praying, but when God talks to us, we're schizophrenic? And that is definitely, you know, she's a humorist, a comedian, and it's all in the perspective of who is listening, who is talking, where you are in your life, and what is happening to you and around you and within you. The next quote is by a very motivational, inspirational person named Anthony Robbins, and he says, in essence, if we want to direct our lives, we must take control of our consistent actions. It's not what we do once in a while that shapes our lives, but what we do consistently. And this is somewhat of a little mantra that Vera and I have going on, because we're always in amazement each time another radio show is completed and we realize how far we've come on a consistent basis each week. And then I have another little quote: change is the essence of life. Be willing to surrender what you are for what you could become. And unfortunately, I do not know who the author is of that particular quote, but change is a key component of everything that we talk about every day, it feels like to me. I think I hear Vera is on the line.
Hi, Debbie. Hi, everyone.
I'm talking about change today, and it's being the essence of life. You know, there's a quote, something like that. The only thing that's the same is change. Is that, what is the exact quote? Do you know? It's something like, the only thing that remains the same is change. It's something like that. Somebody can look it up for me.
Well, there's the French. There's plus ça change, plus ça reste la même chose.
I think
it's the equivalent of same S, different day.
Okay. Let's see. And on the network, I wanted to remind everybody that there is something new on the network, and that is in their profile questions. If they click their settings button and click the profile questions, there is a new one, and that one is an affirmation to an agreement of how we proceed on the website and the disclaimer and the guidelines. Okay, and I've noticed a lot of new people have been applying for membership lately, and they've not been fulfilling the total requirements. If anyone is inviting one of their good friends, please make it really personal. Tell them that they must have a person's name as an invitation, and that they are supposed to be telling something about their life story so we can get to know them. Other kinds of things going on the network, I would invite you to join Vinton McCabe and John Harvey in the ongoing discussion entitled, How Do You Define homeopathy, and we are looking kind of for a consensus and more votes of confidence from the entire world of homeopathy. It's really a process of simplifying our message and getting down to the bare essentials, to the essence and the root of what it is, the principles of homeopathy, which we're studying every day here. Okay. I wanted to also thank Dr. Navneet Madani for his comments in the Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, Who's Reading the Organon group, because he has followed up on yesterday's talk, or July 21st talk on aphorisms 18 and 19, that the real meaning of the totality of the symptoms is probably hidden within this aphorism. Okay. And we have a long way to go today in reading 23 and footnotes and 24. So I'm ready.
Okay.
Here is, okay.
Shall I read 23?
Please.
Okay. All pure experience, however, and all accurate research convince us that persistent symptoms of disease are far from being removed and annihilated by opposite symptoms of medicines, as in the antipathic, enantiopathic, or palliative method. That, on the contrary, after transient apparent alleviation, they break forth again only with increased intensity and become manifestly aggravated. And we're led to aphorisms further along. I think that one of the simplest examples of that is if you have a burn and you plunge the burning part into cold water to cool it down, which is opposite, when you bring it out, it will heat up to more than it heated before.
Okay.
It's almost as if when you set up an opposite, a dynamic of opposite, you also almost set up a dynamic that's competitive. Which side of the opposite can be stronger?
So you can look at it as a competition of forces, like a tug of war of who's going to be stronger, the one force pitting against the other force, or in that way, or bringing two opposites of a magnet together, the positive and negative, what happens? They actually collapse into each other, but so they come into each other. So I want to understand this a little bit more, how the opposites, how they work or don't work, and how similars work and do and don't work, in what way that we can bring these examples to make it, this aphorism really hit home to us.
Well, I think also if you think about what Hahnemann was saying before. In 22, he says in the footnote, he says that the vital energy possesses very little knowledge, so it can't do anything else than express its depression by symptoms. So the vital force produces symptoms to express that there is a problem inside. So if we say, like, for example, if someone has a cold, if we see that the problem, the cause of the cold is in the cold virus or whatever it is, and there's too much mucus, there's too much liquid, we need to dry up this cold, then we're not taking into account why this cold is being produced in the first place. And this cold is being produced because the vital force feels it's of benefit. So the more we try to dry up the cold, the more something will try and produce more of that cold until it gives up, produces something else. I think there's a concept that the body doesn't do anything that the vital force doesn't feel, often misguidedly, is necessary for the survival of this body.
Well, that tells me that the vital force has tremendous wisdom on how to heal. Not that it possesses very little knowledge, but it says, this is the way that I need to clear myself of this virus, or to bring myself back into a state of health, is by producing these discharges either as a protective mechanism or a cleansing mechanism or something. It's doing something to heal itself.
But it's doing something that's not necessarily wise. It's doing something that is all it can do. It's like very often we're stuck in situations where we make decisions that aren't the wisest decisions, but we're doing all we can with the tools that we have, which I think is a mantra for every parent. But the vital force is doing everything it can with the tools it has, but the tools that the vital force has cover only a limited scope, beyond which you need the intelligent physician. I'll give another example. This was something curious. It was not a homeopathy patient, but the concept was interesting. This was I think he was an 85-year-old man, something like that, 84, 85, who had been taking medication for prostate cancer. And he was clear, but he'd been told to carry on taking the medication. A side effect of the medication was high blood pressure. He went for a healing treatment. So this is like not minimally interventionist. And what happened was that his blood pressure went up after healing. Mm-hmm. It went down immediately after, and then it went up to higher than it was. Because the body was raising the blood pressure for a reason in response to the toxin that was being put in through this medication. And until you remove the reason for the body to raise the blood pressure, it won't stop raising it. For another very simple, our old onion example, the onion is drying, the onion is causing you to weep, okay? So you could take medication like you would take for a cold. You know, you've got a problem, something's making your eyes weep. So you take the medication, and then you're setting up a dynamic that's not a healthy dynamic, because the onion is trying to get your eyes to weep via the vital force, and the way it impinges on the vital force. Your eyes are not weeping because they've been dried up, so it sets up a conflict. Now, it's possible that the medication will win.
Well, the conflict in that particular example, in my mind, is that there is something in the environment that is causing the individual to weep, but once it's taken away, you're going to be fine again. You know, it's just something. And so by taking medication, you're overcompensating. You're taking away something that you're actually adding something to the mix, as opposed to just removing something that doesn't need to be there, you know, in that sense. So we don't know the longevity of that medication, that take away the medication, and also you'll be back to where you were. So these are, to me, this Aphorism 23 is extremely philosophical. And when we get into whether the vital force has an innate wisdom, a infinite capacity to heal, or whether it is limited and it needs mankind as a physician, as a helper, in partnership with spirit. So this is really a very deep aphorism and heavy thinking, because I think perhaps each person will have their own point of view of where they stand with it, whether there is a limited scope. I like to think that humankind has an unlimited ability to heal. That's the way I like to look at it, because especially when you are in a very a life and death situation, and you think that there's no hope, and yet there is a spark of hope, and that hope is for healing, for returning to wellness once again. And if anybody's been in that situation, they know what I'm talking about.
I think that you need to differentiate between between the vital force and the soul, because I don't feel Hahnemann is telling us that they are the same thing at all. Okay. The vital force is more like a janitor in our physical state. The vital force is maintaining the building. But also the first thing, but the second distinction is, I think you need to distinguish between the vital force's ability to heal and between the potential of the human body soul organism to heal itself. And the potential is huge. But within the average regular scope, without homeopathic intervention or without various other spiritual interventions which are not part of our discussion,
thank you.
That potential itself is not tapped. The vital force in itself often can't tap it. I'd like to bring an example from one of my teachers, Dr. Chaim Rosenthal, used to talk about a map of health. Maybe other teachers also talk about this, where he says that the body needs to get to its place of health, and the vital force very often loses the directions. And the job of the remedy is to give the vital force directions on how to reach its optimum place of health in any particular symptom picture. So it was a certain way that he expressed it, that given the whiteboard and coloured markers, I could probably draw flowers and make some kind of map that shows the picture. But I found it quite an effective metaphor.
Yeah,
it's the same way as when we're lost. If we're lost in a town, and we could be going round and round in circles, and becoming very unhappy and heated and not getting done what we want to get done. But if someone hands us a map, it's information. That's all it is. But it's a map.
Mm-hmm.
And then life changes.
And So tell me, are you giving, what's the map? The vital force?
The map is the information contained in the remedy, according to this metaphor.
Okay, thank you.
That's the directions, the instructions.
Okay. Very, very cool. I love these metaphors. I'm imagining, not exactly as a police officer, but the person who is the guard in the street who is, or even when you're at a subway station and there's a information booth and you're lost and you need to know where to go and what train to take. And there are probably tons and tons of metaphors that could be used to illustrate this concept that you've proposed to us of being lost and finding your way. And the remedy is the guidepost for you to give your body and your mind and spirit the vital force you want. There's the intermediary. The vital force is the go-between between the body and the soul. So that vital force is giving us direction how to connect the two once again. Oh, I like that.
But one other point that I'd like to raise. You talked about a deep philosophy, and I actually prefer to refer to everything in the Organon as deep practicality, because Hanuman is saying to us, look for this, look for that. Hanuman is saying to us, all pure experience. That's not all pure thought and meditation. All pure experience means working with cases, working more and more with people, doing research and seeing other people's experience and looking at what really happens. And I think that part of the problem in terms of consensus about homeopathy is that the Organon has been relegated to a philosophy book, and it's not. It's how to do the job. It's a practical manual. And when we see, as we've seen in previous aphorism, how Hanuman sets out for us step after step after step, this is how you look at it. Pure experience shows that. So as with any form of teaching, we're relying on someone who has experimented and tried and experienced. There are those who don't see the Organon in that light, but I think that I think it's missing out on a central kernel, the kernel of homeopathy, the essence of the homeopathic remedy, not to take the Organon as the practical how-to manual of how to do this job.
Okay. Well, that is exactly, precisely, why you started the entire program in the middle of the book, which everybody thought was like, what are they doing? Mm-hmm. Because that is what the biggest message that you wanted to come across is, there is a practical side to this. But, you know, whenever you do anything, you have to first introduce each other to each other. You know, you have to welcome and greet and come to a common understanding. And this, so he does start, I think, with a premise to come to common ground. And the premise is the similimum, the law of similars. And therefore, from that kernel, that essence, beginning stage of where we can begin a discussion, then he brings us to how to do it later on. But, you know, little hints of it along the way. So I am in total agreement with you that we've got, I don't think it's only a how-to book, because you do have all parts and all sides of the issue written down here, but we do need to keep a closer look on the practical side.
But I think the purpose of the book was to tell people how to do homeopathy. The philosophy and the thought and the getting to know Hanuman was a byproduct. But what Hanuman wanted to explain to people was how and why, but how to do homeopathy. He was relating to doctors who were already doing some form of medicine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that's something. Yeah, that's something to remember.
Right. He was talking from his time period and from his knowledge about the past and healing and medicine. So he's bringing a lot into the one book, The Organon, for us to take as how-to and also to take into our understanding about how-to. I thought that there were a few words in aphorism number 23 that might need some definitions or explanations, and even how to pronounce enan. Enantiopathic.
Enantiopathic. Enantiopathic.
Okay, enantiopathic. And what that means for some people. And I was looking up on a atomic level, they were saying it meant something. And it means actually in general the opposite passion or affection. And there was, in Webster's, it referred to Hanuman.
Well, I always recommend, and I'm not getting percentages. Yasgur, don't go anywhere homeopathic without it. Says enantiopathic is in brackets palliative, so it's enantiopathic or palliative. Hanuman is giving us two terms, which, according to Yasgur, mean the same thing, apparently. The allopathic method of treating diseases of contrary properties. So basically, certainly allopathy at that time was taking something, if it's wet, dry it up. If it's dry, lubricate it. If it's burning, cool it down. And if it's cold, heat it up.
Along
that vein.
Okay, so do you call it antipathy or antipathy? Or what
It antipathic. I call it antipathic, enantiopathic, or palliative, but that's because I'm not using my Hungarian accent today.
Oh, I don't have any accents to give you. If I don't look up in Yaskor, it says antipathy is a feeling of intense aversion, dislike, or hostility, from the Latin antipathia. So it's a contrary, and you know, you can even say it's repugnance. That's what they say. As oil and water have antipathy, so maybe we should look on it with distaste and disdain. I don't know. It says itself in its own word. And palliative is. Go ahead.
I was just saying the classic of the. Of the antipathic, of the opposites, is to take, to plunge your one hand into cold water and leave the other as the control for the experiment. And you keep the hand in cold water for a few seconds. And afterwards, you'll see that it will heat up to hotter than the other hand.
Oh, dear. What's happening? Is the energy moving?
It's setting up a pendulum swing, almost, between heat and cold in the hand that's been overcooled. So then it has to overheat.
Okay. Is this safe for everybody to go and do? In other words, there's sometimes, you know, you see these Fear Factor shows and they don't do this at home. Okay, so on this is okay for everybody to experiment and actually see for themselves what happens when you plunge one hand into ice water and the other one just leave it as a control and see what happens and feel it for yourself. Oh, gosh, this is really silly, but if you ever went to summer camp, children used to do this to each other when another child was sleeping. They would take, I think it was hot or warm water, and they would, if somebody had their hand out in of their covers, they would have a bowl or a bucket, and they would put that hand into warm water. You know what the result is? I don't know. Yeah. Well, I will leave that up to your imagination. okay. Today is one of humor and lightness.
And well, so let's recommend that people don't ice their hands up too much in the process.
Don't try that second one. Don't try that second one on your best friend. let's see. Do we have any footnotes? No footnotes today.
No footnotes today. Let's read 24 quickly. And we'll go over it again if necessary. Okay? There remains, therefore, no other mode of employing medicines in diseases that promises to be of service besides the homeopathic, by means of which we seek, for the totality of the symptoms of the case of disease, a medicine which, among all medicines, whose pathogenetic effects are known from having been tested in healthy individuals, has the power and the tendency to produce an artificial morbid state most similar to that of the case of disease in question.
There remains no other mode of employing medicines. Well, I wanted to give you a note of appreciation earlier back when you said that there were other ways that the individual could heal, because I think that that's an important point, that not only do we have homeopathy, but there are other forces in the world that are beyond our comprehension, things like prayer and stuff. So it is time to say goodbye for another day. We have two more today's, what is today, Tuesday? We have
Monday.
Two more. Today's Monday. Oh, I'm ahead of myself. Oh, we got three more sessions this week. Boy, we've got a lot to cover, and we want to thank everyone who plugs in, calls, either comments or listens in with us, and tells their friend to also listen in. There, I will put up a little place on the group for anybody to comment on today's show. I hope you enjoyed it. And we will see you tomorrow to Who's Reading the Organon. Thank you so much, Vera. It's been such a pleasure.
Okay, thanks, Debbie. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.